You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is the Last Word FM podcast powered by Transmission Roundhouse. In this episode, Kiari Page speaks with playwright, poet, and writer Jessica Fatoye about her play, Does Your Heart Have Bone?, and her journey to theatre. Here's Kiari in conversation with Jessica.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Last Word FM. I am back, and I am with a special guest, Jessica Fatoye.
Not the special guest.
Well, you are. You have done so much. Like, you are a part of the Residence Artist Program with Roundhouse. You have done previously written work with the Almaty Theater Young Creatives and stage work with Hidden Views Productions, and she has a background in poetry and has published work in Onyx and Five Magazine. And recently, last week, you did your play debut with Does Your Heart Have Bone? So how does that feel?
Yeah, it was actually like 2 days ago. It was on Wednesday.
I spent time.
It feels like a week, though. It was fun. It was really good. I think it felt really... It kind of happened all in a blur. And it felt really, like, cathartic to kind of just have it on the stage, because we'd had, like, a really intense rehearsal period. So I kind of spent... And I was, like, directing it. I wrote it. One of the actresses that was playing one of the parts dropped out, so I had to play her part. And I was producing it with my friends, so I was doing a lot of roles kind of all at once, and there's a lot of moving parts. So I think, like, once I actually got on stage and, like, the play actually happened, I was like, ah! Like,
I mean,
you did it.
My first question is, like, are you okay? Because you have done so many roles.
I want to ask myself that question. I don't know if I'm okay. Like, it's only been 2 days. Like, I haven't checked myself for bruises yet. I've just been, like, sleeping. So, but yeah, it was fun. It was definitely... I loved it. It was a really great experience.
Yeah, so then, like, tell us a little bit more about the play and how the audience received it. Was it well received? Did they get what you were trying to portray about, like, death, taboo, and that whole process?
I mean, I hope so. I do hope. I think there's always a bit of nerves when you put something on, because especially when you write something and then you direct it, you're so close to the text, so... I think, like, a lot of, like, you know, like, jokes and stuff like that, like, they go through a phase of, like, when you write it, you're like, oh, this is funny. And then when you get to, like, the fifth draft, you're like, is this funny? And then, like, when you start directing, you're like, maybe it is funny. And then when it's on stage, you're like, oh, no, it's definitely not funny. Like, they're going to hate it. But we had a lot of laughs. Laughs in, like, the places I hope that people would laugh. We had tears in the places I hope that people would be moved. So overall, I think it... did what I wanted it to do, and it affected people, which is the only thing that I can hope for. I mean, once you put something out, you can't control how people react to it.
Right.
You can only hope that, like, your writing and, you know, your message comes across. So, yeah, I think it moved people, and that's all I can hope for.
Okay, so we're going to get back to, like, your debut and how that feels, but I do just want to omit one small thing. So... I couldn't find you on social media, but I did find you on LinkedIn. And and so if I did not find the right Jessica, then you can just be like, no, that was not me, girl.
Oh, my gosh.
But I want to ask, like, it said in your bio on LinkedIn that you, like, interconnect with, like, your artsy life with medicine and bringing that into life. Is that
true?
Relating it back to medicine.
The allegations are true. I am a medical student. My last week of medical school is coming up, actually. So
snaps, yeah. Claps. Let's give it up. Yes.
Thank you. I'm really shy now. It's so much easier talking about like things that aren't related to medicine for some reason. But yeah.
Yeah. So like, I found the right LinkedIn page. That's all I wanted to know because I was struggling so hard. I was just like, I just want to know a little bit more. So, but yes, I did see that through online. And it's quite interesting that how do you juggle being a medical student doing like this play, like just that came out 2 days ago. And, you know, you have been doing this published work as well. It has to be time consuming and sometimes feeling exhausting.
Mm. I'm not the greatest medical student. Mm-hmm. I would say. So that makes things easier. I'm not dangerous, though. My patients are well taken care of. I think it's just because it's something that I love doing. I think I've always written. I don't think it's always been as focused as, you know, having to, you know, write and direct a play, obviously. Most of it's been more like fitting it in around my schedule, but I think I'm the sort of person when I decide I want to do something, I become kind of like kind of one track mind. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if that means that, you know, I'm leaving the hospital at 2 and I'm getting on the coach to come to London from uni to do a rehearsal, then I'll do it. I don't think I could sustain that for months on end, but like mm-hmm. a short 3-week rehearsal period, I can do that. So yeah, I guess in terms of balance, I don't know. It's not like I go to the gym. If I went to the gym, I think that would be... I think it would actually be impressive. Mm. But yeah.
Yeah, no worries. And basically about the theme around Does Your Heart Have Bone? Is it with loss and death? And was that something that you personally experienced that you put out into the play, or was it something that you just wanted to touch on because culturally or as a society, so many people experience loss and death?
I mean, I think it's kind of a mixture of both. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to separate personal influences from the way that you write, which is why I hate when people like come up to writers and they're like, oh, this was based on this, wasn't it? Or this was based on this person, because it makes everything that you've written completely redundant. Like, it's not an autobiography just because it's, you know, you take elements from real life. I think that's what every writer does. So yeah, there definitely are elements of my real life and my own experiences with death and grief and taboo around death and circumstances around death in the Nigerian community. But it's also something that I just observed from, like, my wider life. Mm-hmm. I found it really hard to talk to my family about my great aunt who passed away a few years ago. Mm-hmm. She had terminal cancer. And kind of the difficulties in having those important conversations, things like talking about wills, like, pretty much none of the elders in my family even have a will.
I understand. You are preaching to the choir, but go on.
Like, they don't have wills. They don't have things like, you know, life insurance, because it's this idea of, you know, the power of the tongue. And if we do these things and it's somehow speaking these negative things into existence. And I really noticed that kind of, there was this like rigidity and like there was this kind of area of conversation that I could never broach with the elders of my family. And I thought that that was something that a lot of my friends and a lot of people that I know around me could relate to. I saw it in the church. I saw it, you know, in my mom and my aunties and my grandma's group of friends. So I thought, you know, taking a personal circumstance, which was my great aunt's passing, and all the things that we didn't get to talk about, and kind of putting that into something that I think more people could relate to. Mm-hmm. That was kind of where it all came from. But I don't know if that answered the question, because I think I might have gone off on a tangent.
No, it's okay. But like, I think, especially in Black culture, this is so much happening in Black culture, so I don't want to discredit not acknowledging, but just trying to get a sense of where this question is coming from. And this is deriving from personal experience as well, is that, you know, from how I grew up, it was like when someone passes away, it is a big, like, festival in the community, you know? Like, you have, like, I remember when my great-grandmother and my little cousin passed away. I was 10 years old, and, like, the procession to the church, we had, like, church members coming, like, two weeks before everything, and it was like we did something Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and the dynamics that I saw with my family and the struggle of that, and also my great-grandmother had have four children as well, and just seeing how that all plays out. Luckily, she did have a will. That was one thing. But even with the will, it was still a gray area of who was going to do this, who was going to do that, because they were so used to a certain way of life when she was living. Mm-hmm. And I think even those conversations are need to be had. And then I'm just wondering, like, what is so taboo in your culture, in your experience with, like, your family that is not really touched on? I know, like, will is one of the things that you touched on, but are there any others?
I think it's a complex topic. It's hard to it's hard to summarize a culture in a few sentences.
Right.
I think part of it is lived experience, but I think, I mean, things like, back to what I was saying about the power of the tongue, really, I think that kind of summarizes it up as best as I can in a few words. Nigerians are very, very superstitious. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I think that it's brought a lot of beauty and fun to the way that I've grown up. But part of that is this idea that, you know, the negative things that you say, they will come back to you. Mm-hmm. So you can profess them over your life or over someone else's life just by the power of the spoken word. And I think that that has kind of created this idea of I will not admit when bad things are happening to me, mm-hmm. because I'm not going to profess that over my life. It's like by saying it out loud, that means that these things are real. Mm-hmm. Or even things like, I think this isn't necessarily to do with the tongue, but I think it seeps into actions as well. Things like, you know, like life insurance or making a will, or even I'm not going to go to the doctor because I don't need the doctor to be involved in what's going on here, because that's almost like relinquishing the control that God has over the situation. And, you know, I'm now saying that, you know, I don't believe that I'm going to be cured and I need someone else to intervene and to interfere in order to be okay. I think that's kind of how I would summarize the that kind of the culture, the negative side of the culture that I was kind of talking about in the play.
Mm. So what superstition that you believe in?
Oh. I'm going to bait myself out for all my weird beliefs. I mean, I feel like if you ask, like, any West African kid, maybe even any African kid, in fact, maybe even any, like, black person in the UK, if they believe in black magic, they'll probably say yes. As in, like, in some way, shape, or form, we all have, like, varying degrees of that belief. But, like, for example, if somebody, like, tells me that, I don't know, they're like a witch, I'm gonna be like, I'm taking that seriously. Like, I'm gonna be like, okay, girl, like, I believe you, and, like, please do not cast a spell on me. Like, I'm just gonna, like, I'm gonna play it safe. We're gonna be friends. Like, we're gonna be on good terms being that person.
Yeah, that's definitely influenced in American culture, black American culture as well. Like, but we categorize it as basically based in Louisiana and New Orleans and, like, voodoo and all of that stuff. But it derived from Africa. Like, it derived from, like, our ancestors. So it's definitely a level and a layer of that still there, present in just black culture in general. And it's kind of crazy when you, like, you hear, like, my superstition is, like, when my palm itches, money is on the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Or, I didn't know that was a thing.
Or if it itches, then an opportunity that I really wanted is on the way.
My palms never be itching. That's
so
a sad
every
thing.
Time it itches, I'll be like, I'm getting riches.
Right, let me scratch at this.
Yes, but it's so crazy to see that even though we're coming from two different parts of the world and two different cultures, mm-hmm. but we still share similarities when it comes to experiences and how that dynamics change. It's like in our perspectives can influence so much. And I just really want to talk about moving away from the play for a little bit is about your published poetry and how your published work has influenced many people.
Mm. It's weird to talk about my published poetry because I think it was kind of how I think poetry is a lot of people's introduction into writing because it's very, I think there's a lot of rules on form and structure and yada, yada, yada on kind of more like, on things like scripts, like play scripts or like TV scripts or film scripts, and it's really inaccessible. But poetry kind of feels like, it's like the football of like writing. Like anyone can just like pick up a book and just write something. Anyone can pick up a ball and just like, you know, you can play football with a beer can, like a crumpled beer can. That's football. So yeah, it's weird talking about poetry now because it feels like it's something I've always done. And it's so different to writing scripts because like scripts just seem so formal. But yeah, publishing poetry, I started off as a poetry and fiction editor for Onyx back when I was in like, I think my second year of university or my first year. I think it started off with me like sending in a poem to their submission period for their like imprint magazine. And then I saw that like a little bit afterwards they were taking applications for like editors. So I signed up. And yeah, it's like, I don't know, publishing poetry is a strange experience because it seems like a merging of the personal and the public. I think poetry is very personal. Mm. But it also feels, I guess, like, you know, very cathartic to kind of have it all out there and have people read it and have people connect with it because it makes you feel less alone. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of poetry can feel so personal that it feels like you're writing about individual experiences that never happened to anyone else, but having someone read and connect with a poem, it makes you realize that there's not really anything new under the sun. You know, people are people and people understand people because, you know, we've all been through the same things. But I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. It's just, I just want to learn more about like your creative process, really like your journey from, you know, again, you're like a medical student, you are a published poetry writer, and then now you have debuted a play. How did you get to where you are now?
I don't know if I'm anywhere. I guess, I think it's not been, I think the traditional journey, I think most people expect that if you are a writer or you write, then you have gone to like some fancy university for English literature, or you've done a creative writing course, or, you know, you've somehow been trained up specifically for like that kind of world. And I think that was really intimidating for me, which is why I think poetry was such like a beautiful entry for me into like actually showing the world my writing. Because I used to feel really insecure about the fact that I do medicine and, you know, I kind of went down a pathway that I felt wasn't really similar to a lot of the people I was seeing in like theater or in poetry or anything like that. And I felt like people would always see me as someone that was good at science, and therefore if I tried to do something creative, it was sterile and it was robbed of the kind of warmth and wealth of experience that people that, you know, do English and theater and drama, that they can bring to the table. But I mean, I think in terms of getting to where I am today, it was just kind of allowing myself to realize that there's no prescribed path, there's no kind of rule or rhetoric to life that we may sometimes think that there is. And truly, like, it's up to me what I decide to do, and it's up to me to decide my path. no one else can decide that for me. And if I want to go to university and study medicine and then all of a sudden switch up and say, actually, I want to put on plays and I want to do this for the rest of my life, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And if I want to say, actually, I want to do both, that's also okay. If I say I want to do neither, that's fine. I think it was just about realizing that it was okay for me to take control of that and therefore kind of just like relinquishing myself from other people's opinions a little bit. That's how I would say I got to where I am today, if where I am is anywhere.
So if you were having to choose a path, if because like whatever life circumstances throw at you, would you choose to go the more the creative arts route or would you go to the medicine route?
It's hard for me to say just because I don't think that... I think it's really easy to categorize yourself based on what you do. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people will get asked, what do you do? And the first thing they'll go to is their job. They'll say, I'm a writer or I'm an actress or I'm a doctor or I'm an accountant or I'm a banker. But that's not really who you are. That's not who... I mean, if I... ask my mom to describe me, I don't think the first thing she'd say is a writer or a doctor. I think she'd say that's my daughter and she's funny and she's clever and she's beautiful. All of those things would be because she's my mom and she thinks the world of me. But it's not those things and like what I do, it's not who I am. So I'm not tied to one identity and therefore I don't think that the pressure of choice is something that I want to confine myself to. Mm-hmm. I very well could do medicine. It is a beautiful degree. It's one of the best jobs in the world. You get to affect people in just one of the most incredible ways. You're there for their best times. You're there for their worst times. But also as a writer, you get to kind of do that in the same way. You get to really affect people in ways you never expected. So yeah, I think it would be hard for me to choose, which is why I'm going to give you a non-answer and say I don't want to.
Well, fair enough. But then on the caveat of that, who is Jessica Fatoye?
Wow. I see you, Madam Interviewer. Who is Jessica Fatoye? I would say I'm a lot of things. I would say I'm a really emotional person. I'm a very sensitive person. I would say I love to have my people around me. I'm that friend that is always organizing like games nights and like weird, like I'm trying to plan a water tasting for my friends. Because the other day, one of like my like uni course mates told me that she could tell the difference between boiled water and like tap water that's just like room temperature. Mm-hmm. And like she could. Like she got like 6 out of 6 in like a water tasting test. So like I was like, yo, I'm trying to do this and like invite all the mandem just to my house and like we're gonna do a water tasting test. I would also say I'm weird. I think that I think that that would justify that answer. Yeah, I'm a lot of things. I think overall, you know, I'm just a person who's just, I don't know, trying to figure it out, what I want to do, what motivates me, what I love. But that's what I can tell you for now.
And so with your whole process and your whole journey, and I wanted to kind of touch back on Does Your Heart Have Bone? How were the characters like for those who didn't see the play? Like, how did they interact with each other? Can you give us any tidbit on, you know, more into the play itself?
So the play, I'll kind of recite what I wrote on the little, like, marketing thing as best as I can remember it. But yeah, the play's on death, taboo, and therapy. So it touches on a 25-year-old woman, Nigerian black woman, black British, entering therapy for the first time following the death of her grandmother. And it basically just follows her journey through therapy. She's quite, she's a funny but annoying character. Like, she's really irritating. I talk about her as if, like, she's, like, my friend and she's sitting right next to me. But, yeah, she's really irritating because I feel like she spends the whole almost the like 70% of the play, basically just using different tactics to kind of avoid opening up about her feelings and avoid kind of talking about the magnitude of the grief that she's facing. And the play also deals with her relationship with her mother. Her mother's a single mother, so it's just her and her mother as like the family unit. And kind of the previous grief that they've endured as a family, just, you know, besides her grandmother's death. So yeah, it kind of goes through all of those dynamics, the dynamic mm-hmm. between her and her mother, the dynamic between her and her therapist. Her therapist is a white therapist, which I think she really weaponizes to try and avoid opening up. And yeah, her relationship with her grandmother as well, and also her relationship with her grief and the grief that she's experienced previously in her life. So that's kind of a whistle-stop summary of what happens in the play.
Now, can we get to see this play again?
Oof, Lord, I hope so. if God allows it, then that shall be. I really hope it's not the end for the play. Mm-hmm. I would love to put it on again, whether that be, you know, in a fringe festival, or if, you know, a theater is listening to this and they want to put it on. But yeah, I would love to put the play on again. Mm-hmm. I think even just working with like the cast and the crew, like we just became so close over our rehearsal period, and to have the opportunity to just go through that again, I think would just be amazing for everyone. So yeah.
Yeah. And do you have any future projects coming up?
For now, I'm not sure. I hope so. I'm always like tinkering away at little things, like writing little things. But I think because I've been focused on this for so long, my brain's kind of like, okay, like let's just take like a week at least, yeah. where we're not like trying to put something on. So yeah, for now I'm just kind of writing and seeing where it goes. We started a little production company, which is a production company that produced the play called Draft 7 Productions. If you guys want to follow it on Instagram to see the future life of the play,
yes, please.
but yeah, besides that, like no like major burning projects or anything, just seeing what happens.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation, and thanks to TR for allowing me to interview you.
Jessica is a Roundhouse resident artist. You can learn more about that at roundhouse.org.uk. Kiari is a podcast producer and Transmission Roundhouse alumni. The Last Word FM is powered by Transmission Roundhouse and part of the Last Word Festival program at the Roundhouse.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.